The Holy Gospel according to Mark. Glory to you, O Lord. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice. "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had been raised from the dead. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Invite you to be seated. So this transfiguration story can be a difficult one for 21st century minds. We just naturally question miracles. We live after the Enlightenment. And so first century writings, an era that regularly perceived and interpreted miracles, and that was just part of life, that sounds primitive or fairy tale-like to us, kind of like two sisters in an ice castle or something like that. How to make sense of it. But then again, do we really think the idea of a glowing holy figure ever made sense? The transfigured Jesus isn't supposed to be figured out, analyzed, merely seen as something out of the ordinary. Every year on the Sunday of the Transfiguration, Martin Luther would preach on three words: listen to him. But listen to what? Because different Christian groups listen to different things. His teachings, that he's an example for us, the way he lived his life. Well, yes, but mostly his death and resurrection. See, right before and after this transfiguration story, Jesus talks about dying and being raised. Listen to him is about the moment that really clarifies who Jesus was, his execution, which all of the gospel authors write about in more detail than anything else in Jesus' life. For example, Mark spends 10 chapters on 3 years of Jesus' life, 10 chapters, 3 years, and 6 chapters on the final week. See, what's more important? The disciples don't get it, not until at least after the resurrection. For example, just as the words about dying leave Jesus' lips, the disciples start arguing about who's greater than who, who's the greatest among them. Perhaps they just don't want to hear that their teacher wouldn't succeed. They couldn't quite grasp a fully human Messiah who appears to lose, a Son of God who would come down from the glory of the mountain and choose the valley of the shadow of death. And I don't think much has changed. There's that human side of us too. We want to be part of something that's successful. We want our religion to be something that's successful. The mountaintop has much more appeal than the crucifixion. Most, that human part of us, would rather trust a glorified Son of God, strong, victorious, supernatural, doing miracles. We'd rather demand supernatural signs to confirm that God exists, or to confirm our own decisions about life, or even to reveal God's will in a certain situation. And there are some popular Christian leaders who espouse a type of theology of glory. You know, if you believe in a certain way or do certain things, God will reward you in this life. You will be strong and victorious over trouble and rich and prosperous, and you will know God's will for you if only you believe in this way or have enough faith or do this. And even us, more traditional mainline Christians, even though Jesus was killed through ordinary means, government execution, the crucifixion, even though we were brought into faith with ordinary means, water, baptism, even though week after week God meets us in nothing more than ordinary bread and wine or grape juice, even though we know better, most of us prefer to look for God in some supernatural, some kind of mysterious, extraordinary, otherworldly sign, instead of God working through creation, doctors and scientists and teachers and government, even though we're ordinary people with unique gifts, for sure, but regular, ordinary human beings, when something very bad happens to us, one common reaction is to think, why me, Lord? Aren't I more special? Why should bad things happen to me? As if somehow we should be given otherworldly protection outside of this world's brokenness. Even though God has given us ordinary means to make decisions in life, our brains, our resources at our fingertips, people, even though we still look for God to give us supernatural signs to reveal his will to us somehow outside of these ordinary means. See, the mountaintop glory has much more appeal than the ordinary. We just can't, like the disciples, grasp a Son of God who'd come down from the mountaintop into the darkness of real life and do his most profound work in the darkest place. Neither could the first disciples grasp that Jesus could be anything but a hero and victorious. And so when the time came, none wanted to be part of his mission that seemed to lose so quickly and tragically, and all looked to save their own skin and abandoned him. See, in the end, neither can we really trust this mountaintop or believe in this mountaintop Jesus. He's beyond our grasp. It's only the Jesus of the cross that human beings can fully trust in that moment of his vulnerability. The beloved one who dies for challenging us and our religions. The cross speaks of God's complete and utter forgiveness, because the one we killed as an ordinary criminal was the Son of God. That's what we're to listen to. That's what we're to listen to. Listen to him, Jesus, from the cross, who reveals there our blindness, but even more, who proclaims you are beloved and forgiven. See, when we manipulate religion to support our own agendas, when we think Christianity is about glory, when we resentfully question God because he doesn't come to us the way we expect, we are to hear, you are forgiven, my beloved. When we seek God in some extraordinary sign and ignore that God comes to us through the ordinary, in the world, and through word and bread and wine, Jesus proclaims to us through those means, you are forgiven. What this means is that you, no matter your questions or demands of God today, you, just as the disciples, are in the holy presence of God as we gather together here. You are to hear, you are forgiven, in the words of this sermon and the words we speak and sing together. You're to swallow down this eternal forgiveness in the wine and bread so that it sinks in your ears and down your throats, and you are claimed as God's beloved child this morning, just as you are. And then we rise up from these pews as new people, at least for a little while, sent down the mountain to our daily callings, a people who shine with faith and gratitude, at least for a little while, a people through whom God shines for the sake of the world. Amen.